This really shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be back with you again today. We had a very lovely day today. We're recording this on a Sunday, and boy, let me tell you, it didn't even hit 80. We had a nice fall day today.
That's good, because we're getting into fall, and I've been enjoying a little bit of the sunshine as well. Like I said, we're recording this on Sunday night, and I'm sitting in a hotel room in Seekonk, Massachusetts, Chuck. I've spent the last few days of the weekend with my family up here on vacation, and we've been visiting sites like Plymouth Plantation and the Mayflower 2 and seeing Plymouth Rock and actually going out on the ocean for fishing and whale watching. It's been great.
My envy knows no bounds.
Well, it should. It should know quite a few bounds. You shouldn't be envious. It's an opportunity that everybody should take to come and visit our wonderful and how it's founded, because I was even impressed that even at Plymouth Plantation, which is a national historic place, or the Plymouth Plantations, which has the village and the Wampanoag Indian huts for the reenactment and things of that nature, that they actually still gave a place, the centrality of covenant, of God's word, and of the Bible to the pilgrims, which I thought was fantastic, including seeing copies of the Geneva Bible, which is actually the Bible that the pilgrims came over here with on the Mayflower. So it was fun. But Chuck, we've come a long way since the Mayflower Compact in 1620 and the pilgrims covenanting together for their mutual protection to the point now where, Chuck, now in the 21st century, I'm not sure our forefathers would recognize our country. And if they did, they probably would be very disappointed. One of the things that we talked about here and we talked about earlier, because we are based on a constitutional form of government, and on an earlier program this week, we talked about how even heavy metal rocker Rob Halford from Judas Priest understands that the greatness and the key to this country is our centrality of the Constitution to our country. And earlier on another program, we talked about a particular piece of legislation that would allow the president to make some appointments to executive level agencies, but not cabinet appointments. These would be inferior officers, and how it was constitutional that our founders wrote it into the Constitution to allow him to do that. Well, Chuck, we found out now who one of the first appointments are going to be from after he's been giving this opportunity to appoint some of these positions without having to go through the Senate approval process, the advice and consent function of the Senate. And one of the first is going to be the Undersecretary of the Air Force. And Chuck, you found this one, so I'm going to let you run with it.
It should come as a shock to no one. Really, this especially should not come as a shock to any of the Republicans in the House of Representatives who voted to pass this mess. I understand what the Senate wanted to do in this case. The Senate wanted to lighten the burden that it has in going through some of these minor officials and vetting them for these jobs. First undersecretary in charge of the stationary maintenance engineers. The Senate really doesn't want to hear these things. But here's the problem. You get into situations like this. Now, would the Senate have affirmed an openly gay undersecretary of the Air Force?
I think the answer is probably yes, Chuck.
That was the conclusion I'd drawn as well. They probably would have. But at this point, we don't know if this particular secretarial spot is exactly listed in the law, because if you'll recall, that law specifically listed some positions that would come under this, and I'm not sure this is on there or not. But it really doesn't matter, because we're going to see more and more and more and more of this, because the current president really thinks that he should be able to rule by fiat. And by that we mean he thinks that he should be able to sign any executive order he wants to sign, constitutional or not, and that it becomes the law of the land. And in fact, he's acting that way. And unfortunately, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, has done nothing to stop it. All it would require was an impeachment inquiry on a couple of these, and you know, and I know, especially in an election year, that would stop.
Oh, absolutely. But the point is that I don't believe that the Speaker of the House or any of the House leadership want to, quote-unquote, get into a fight that they think they might lose with the president in a presidential election year. All the political calculations in the world go into this type of thing, Charles, and honestly, this is one that they're willing to give up a few of these in order not to potentially get embarrassed in the media. Well, we're going to try to embarrass them in this media for not doing the right thing. And this is one where, as we said, the president has now announced that he's going to appoint a gentleman by the name of Eric Fanning as the next undersecretary of the Air Force. Now, he's the deputy undersecretary and deputy chief management officer in the Navy. And he previously worked on the House Armed Services Committee. So he's got some background here, but they're going to make him the undersecretary of the Air Force. So he's going to be responsible for over 300,000 active duty Air Force, not just officers, but also the enlisted, 333,000 active duty men and women, 178,000 Air National Guard and Air Force Reserve members, 182,000 civilians and their families. Well, it's interesting, Chuck, because Eric Fanning is also openly homosexual. That shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody. But the one thing that, and it doesn't really come as any surprise to me once we start digging into this, is that Fanning also happens to be a former, well, emphasis on the former now, a former board member of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund. Oh, the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, Chuck, is a gay rights PAC that raises lots and lots of money and gives it to politicians who support homosexual rights causes, like President Barack Obama. Yes, Chuck, I do believe that in my heart of hearts, this is a political payback and a promissory in order to raise campaign cash from the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund.
And that's right. Now, by the way, this article in GayPolitics.com makes it clear that Fanning does have to go through the confirmation process,
which I missed
when I read it.
Okay. So this is one of those ones where it's high enough up that they consider to be a senior officer. Because if he were like a deputy undersecretary, he probably wouldn't have to, under the new law, go through a confirmation. But because they're the undersecretary of the Air Force, he is one of the number two men in charge of the entire operation. That does have Senate confirmation. But I will guarantee you, Charles, that you will not see a major squabble likely to happen over of Eric Fanning, the number two job in the Air Force.
Well, let's talk about the fact that it is an election year. There is not going to be a squabble because the Republicans right now don't want to get in a fight over this when what they're trying to emphasize is the economy. Therefore, this will skate through without a word. Now, here's the problem with some of these appointments, Barry. Some of these appointments under the Civil Service Act, once these guys are in, they don't change jobs necessarily when the administration changes. Some of them are entrenched. Usually the first couple, three levels of management, the secretaries and some of the undersecretary levels, they're partisan positions and therefore they can change. But the whole point behind the Civil Service Act is that very often, once somebody is entrenched in the bureaucracy, you cannot get rid of them.
Oh, right, because then they get all the protections and you get into a situation where they bury themselves into the bureaucracy far enough that in order to get to them, the administration would have to expend some political capital in order to get it done, and political capital that they want to save for other things.
Well, and this is one of those places where a short-sighted need for political victory in the short term can lead to major problems in the long term because, again, like I say, very often you can replace people at the top and they are then hobbled by their bureaucracy. For instance, one of the problems that was run into during the McCarthy hearings, just to bring up for instance, if you remember, Joe McCarthy said there were hundreds of communist agents in the State Department and people laughed at that for 50 years. And then all of a sudden, 40 years in, the Venona files become available.
And so there are thousands in the State Department, not hundreds.
No, there were at least 328 agents in the State Department that were working directly for the Communist International. And remember for years, Barry, how we were told, for instance, Alger Hiss was wrongly accused, had never been a spy, was really a patriot. Yes, he was a progressive, but he was a patriot. So Alger Hiss went to his grave denying the fact that he was a communist. communist agent, and yet he showed up all over the place when the Soviet archives were open. And one of the things that turned out was he was not reporting directly to Russian intelligence. He was working for Bulgaria, of all places. Well, that was done to cover the tracks. But remember that he came in with that whole group that came into the State Department under the Roosevelt administration. These guys got entrenched, and they could not be gotten rid of. And in fact, to keep from making trouble, what they did was they systematically destroyed Joe McCarthy. And there are two books to show you how this tactic works. Two great books, actually. One is called Blacklisted by History by M. Stanton Evans, and the other one is called The Matrokhin Archives. And you can see the contrast in how these two books handled. Evans does not care whether his book gets on the New York Times bestseller list or not, so he's honest. He says places where McCarthy was wrong, and he gives a detailed analysis of Joe McCarthy, and it turns out that Joe McCarthy really was a progressive. And I knew that to be true 40 years ago, because you couldn't get elected in Wisconsin as a senator in the 1940s without being a progressive. Remember, this is the state that elected Robert La Follette,
yes, indeed,
to the Senate for years and years and years and years and years. So you go to the Matrokhin Archives book and you read that, and he goes through and he demonstrates that Joe McCarthy was absolutely correct, and then goes into this diatribe about what a horrible person Joe McCarthy was. I read that and I said, okay, they've just given me two entirely different pictures of Joe McCarthy. What's going on? And I said to myself, and this book was on the New York Times bestseller list, this is the only way to get on the NYT bestseller list. You have to continue to commit the character assassination that the New York Times was the leader in the 1950s on Joe McCarthy. And this is what happens with some of these entrenched guys. They have friends, they went to college together, and you're seeing that kind of network good old boyism happening now as these homosexual actors come in to the federal government. They get entrenched, and it virtually takes dynamite to get them out. Now, I'm speaking metaphorically, just so we make that clear. I'm not advocating anything like that. What I'm telling you is they're impossible to get out. And this is the way that works. And this is what we're seeing here. This guy will get confirmed, and because he has connections, obviously, he previously worked on the House Armed Services Committee. You don't think that he's going to get a real friendly reception if there's some kind of cabal he's involved in the upper echelons of the military service, and it gets called before a congressional hearing? Oh, he's going to get treated with kid gloves, especially because he is now part of a newly privileged class, and that is the poor downtrodden homosexual community. Nonsense. The homosexual community is probably the most privileged class in the United States of America, and has been for a long time, because a lot of the leadership is very intelligent. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of power. They have a lot more power than their numbers warrant, and have had for decades. So this thing about, oh, the poor downtrodden gays being discriminated against, just not happening.
Well, but that's the meme that they want to try to set up. And that's the reason why this comes as no surprise that we're going to be setting these things up this way. Because the Obama administration is doing nothing if not carrying on a theme, which was a promise that Barack Obama made before he was elected president in 2008 to the homosexual community, who has a way of making sure that they remind him of the promises that he made.
Yes, and that's not surprising, but there are also forces inside the Republican Party at top leadership level who are playing the game a little more subtly there, because they know full well that if word gets out, and so does the leadership in the Republican Party, that if word gets out, they are playing the privilege game, that particular demographic, then it's going to be tough on the leadership, who has been victorious in bringing us candidates that no conservative wants, and who are continually handed their heads in upper level electoral politics, but it doesn't seem to matter to the Republican Party leadership. We can't let these conservatives get a hold of the party apparatus. And they continue to bring us this kind of politics, big tent Republicanism, because, quote unquote, this is the only way to win. And then we don't win because the conservatives desert the candidate in droves. Remember that the only thing that kept John McCain from getting steamrolled 65-35 was Sarah Palin. And Sarah Palin despite all the bad press and despite what all the liberals want to say, kept it close. Because what was the final, like 54-46, something like that?
Yes, I believe so.
Before Sarah Palin came in, John McCain was going to get steamrolled. And I have a feeling that's what's going on with the whole Paul Ryan thing. Paul Ryan has the rep as a conservative, and you're not going to see any big announcements in support of any gay candidates out of Ryan, but he'll be quiet on it. We can see these pictures, they look like one thing on the surface, and then when you get down underneath the water, you know, there's an old saying that Ken Gentry used to say, it looks like a duck on the water. On the top side, everything's as smooth as glass, and underneath the surface, there's a lot of fancy footwork going on, and that's what's going on here.
Oh, yeah.
We're out of time, so join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.